You want me to leave? Well, maybe you're right. You had what it was that you wanted tonight.
Welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Cogan, and that is the voice of Steve Goodman. And one of these reissued CDs I've been telling you about for the past couple of months. Steve, of course, what I have to say about Steve Goodman. I want to welcome my old friend, John Cusick of Old St. Patrick's Church, Old St. Pat's Church. I was writing out the list of guests for the show, and I was going to say, like, retired, former priest. You're like a Marine, right? There is no former involved in this,
no,
right?
No, I'm retired from active duty.
Okay, I get it. And we're going to talk about John's book, a little bit about John's book, which we talked about before on the show, Never Be Ordinary Wisdom from My Father. But he's brought in two friends of his, Mike Cahill and his wife Kathy O'Connell Cahill. And the gist of this conversation for the next hour is going to be about the what I call the remarkable First Fridays, the First Friday Club, right, which has now been going on for 33 years.
Right.
You two, the Cahills, are board members. You are the founder of this thing, Father, retired Father, whatever you say, not on active duty, Father Cusick. What was the seed of this thing, John, 33 years ago?
Well, I was invited to speak at the First Friday Club in Cleveland, and which had been going on for like 30 years, way back in 1985. And I was really impressed with it, that it was a downtown forum where you could make some connections between your faith and your values, the work you did every day, and the issues of our times.
Was it presented by a religious organization? Or?
Well, it has Catholic roots.
Okay.
You know, I think we've expanded that, you know, quite a bit. But the important part of it is there's a lot of downtown lunches. You know, there's the Economic Club and
City Club.
City Club, on and on and on. And you can deal with people in the world of finance.
Politics.
Every other kind of thing. Well, we've stayed below the radar because we're not, you know, a great big deal. But I think the value of it is, and Mike, you can talk to this or Kathy.
I think the eclecticism of it.
Yes.
I mean, it is not a one-note thing. It's not, it's not like some kind of, we only have authors. We only
right.
have politicians. We only have sports figures.
Right.
We only have priests.
No, we look for anybody who we think has got a message. And the only people we will not get is anyone running for public office. If you're an announced candidate, see you after the election.
Have announced candidates tried to get a gig at First Fridays?
Not really, because
they know.
Yeah, they do know, and I like to hold to that because we think we're pretty special.
I do too. I've been a speaker there. I looked at the incredibly long and star-studded list. And I could only find my name twice. Once in collaboration with you. I think we did the last one last.
We did May of 2019.
Yeah. And the new one starts in October. We'll tell people who the guests are. Now, Mike and Kathy, when did you get in? When did the good Father Cusick twist your arms to get involved in this thing?
Well, I've only been on the board for a year or two, but I've been an attendee for almost since the beginning. In fact, I was probably at the first one with Cardinal Bernardine back in 86. The one speaker that probably touched me the most early on was Father Mike Flager, who's very controversial.
Sure.
But he came and gave a talk and said, if all your friends look like you do, you don't really know this city, and your faith is lacking a little bit too. And Kathy and I had moved into a neighborhood in Albany Park where our parish is Our Lady of Mercy, which is about 60% Hispanic,
sure.
30%
Filipino. And one of the great mixed neighborhoods
in the city of Chicago.
It's United Nations. Then and now, still, it really is.
But our realtor had said to us, In Chicago code, which you would well know, most of people like you go to Queens, they don't go to Mercy. And we thought about Flager's talk and thought, the heck with that, we're going to go to Mercy. And we've ended up being in a parish 30 years in which most of our friends aren't white, which never would have happened had Mike Flager not kind of tweaked our consciences.
He really inspired, just in one First Friday encounter with him, he inspired the next 20-some years
anyways,
of your life and your lifestyle. Were you equally inspired, Kathy?
Oh, I thought he was great. I mean, we've heard him more than once at the First Friday Club, and I remember hearing Senator Paul Simon there, who you feel like is such a man of integrity in politics, which I don't know how many.
Which is getting harder and harder to be a man of integrity
but,
in politics.
That was wonderful. We got to speak to him after his talk. I remember that, and I was so glad to be able to meet him.
How did you even know about it? Did you have a relationship with John previous to any of this?
I met John in either 76 or 77, 1976 or 77. I was a college seminarian studying to be a priest, trying to decide whether I wanted to live that life or marry Kathy O'Connell. And
no offense, but you made the right choice.
I did.
Just having met Kathy for five minutes, you certainly made the right choice.
But John came and gave a talk. He was at the time an associate priest at Mary Seat of Wisdom in Park Ridge. He came and gave a talk. I don't know if he remembers this. I came up to him afterward and said, "That's the best talk I've ever heard by a priest ever."
You have convinced me to leave the priesthood, Father Cusack.
No, it took a long time for me to make that decision.
No, I'm sure it's much more complicated.
John and I have been friends, I would say, since that moment. So at least in my mind, for 40 some years.
Wow.
And then John used to run the young adult ministry. So back when we were young adults, we did that for for many years. And then we got into going to the First Friday Club through that.
Were you ever drawn to going to Old St. Pat's? I mean, especially given through some of the struggles that John had to go through to get to actually save that now increasingly crowded church.
Yeah, well, we actually got married at Old St. Pat's when Jack Well was first pastor there. Yeah. I think at the time that we got married there were about four parishioners in 1984.
Sure.
And so we've never been members at Old St. Pat's, but we've been involved there from time to time, primarily because of our connections with John and also with Father Jack Wall.
So were you both regular attendees of the First Friday Club?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we've gone every week for 30 years, but or every
I'm going to ask you, have you gone to every single one, John? You must have missed one for some reason.
I missed a couple when I was out of town.
Yeah, yeah.
But other than that, I enjoy it. I mean,
so do I. Everyone I've ever
been. In terms of self-interest, I just find the presentations fascinating. They're not long, 25 minutes. And oftentimes, the best part of it are the questions which come. And I remember one of them within this calendar year of 2019. I forget, Mike, who our speaker was, but you asked a question which just knocked it right out of the park. And it was a reaction to what you heard during a talk, and it was just powerful. You know, where are you going to find that today?
Nowhere. Well, one of the other things that I love about the First Fridays is we live in an increasingly kind of icy, remote age where communication is sort of, you think of a text message as communicating with someone, and to have those kind of gatherings is increasingly important. We're going to spend the whole hour talking about that and John's remarkable book, and I'm sure you have heard him talk about his father before he put it between the covers of this handsome, handsome little book. With a very cute picture of the young John on here with a crew cut. So stay tuned. We're going to explore some of the highlights of 33 years of First Fridays, tell you who the upcoming guest is to start the new season, and it's quite a get, I think.
There's a little switch since I talked to you last.
Why do I have to do it now?
No.
We'll talk about it off air. It's not going to be Michelle Obama. We'll tell you who it's going to be. Not yet. They're going to get her. It's Rick Cogan talking to his old friend, Father John Cusack, and his new friends, Mike and Mary Cahill, about First Fridays, which is an event that's been going on the first Fridays of the month through sort of October through May, usually at the Union League Club of Chicago since 1986. The new season begins on October 4th. We will tell you who that guest is in a while. I want to bring up the fact that I've seen enough of these, and Mike, you and Kathy certainly have. The joy of these First Friday things is no one selling anything. It's not, "Hi, let me read a section from my new book," or "Let me tell you about my latest film," or "Let me tell you about my latest business venture," or "Let me tell you about the last sermon I gave." Do you advise them, board members, or you, founder, what to talk about. When you make the call, when you say hello, Rick Pearson of the my colleague at the Sun Times, and it's this station. Rick spoke in there.
Right.
You say, you just say hi. I'd love to have you speak at our first Friday.
That would be number one. But then number two, what I try to do, and we either talk about it at board meetings, is what is it out of the nature of a possible speaker's work life or even personal life
mm-hmm.
that could be explored, and then could you create a question or a topic around that? For example, we've got the head of Wintrust in November, and Wintrust is known for their generosity to so many causes in Chicago. That that doesn't sound like LaSalle Street Banks.
Right, right.
And the chairman, Ed Wehmer, is personally very socially committed, a man of faith. And so asking him to step out of the role of CEO of a bank and talk about why do you do this?
Yeah.
Why are you generous? And how did you shape a bank in the image of you, its founder, to be known for its care, particularly for those who have no voice?
Some people, though, must, and you two board members know this, some people must be a little intimidated by that, because even people who have risen to positions of prominence have given a number of speeches, and so they do, in many cases, have a file cabinet filled with those speeches that they just kind of recycle and maybe update. Have you found that some people enjoy getting out of their comfort zone? I think they would.
I think they think they're not going to, but then they do when they actually give the talk. I think there's sometimes some reluctance. John was talking about a question I asked last year. It was Patrick Kennedy, the congressman.
Sure.
And he was speaking about mental illness and addiction recovery and those kinds of things. But then in the question period, a number of people started sharing some personal experiences, and he ended up talking about how difficult it was for his father, this famous senator who had his own issues with substance abuse,
sure.
How difficult it was for his father to accept that his son was in recovery. And his father's first response was, "Don't let anybody know," which is a classic Irish response.
Of course.
And he talked about how by the end his father was coming around to being proud of him, but it was a long, slow process. And had he just pulled out his standard talk on mental illness, he probably never would have got there. So
yeah. Now, John,
he was wonderful.
You've had people come in. You were telling a story off air about a real estate mogul who came, and he was going to talk about rebuilding part of Chicago or whatever real estate.
Oh yeah, he had it in his file. I mean, he walked in and it was right next to his. And I worked on him during lunch.
How so?
Well, I kept pounding about what we were about, and really what I think he could bring to the microphone in 12 minutes. And by God, Rick, I don't know what flipped the guy over, but when he was introduced, he left this talk inside the manila file, walked up without a note, and he spoke. And he spoke from the heart. And he went back to how he got in the business. And he talked about his grandfather and his father and some of the things that he took from them trying to achieve a certain sense of success. His son was sitting at the table. He said, "I never heard my dad talk like this."
Wow.
And I'm thinking, yes, that's the First Friday Club.
Yeah, I agree. Everything I've seen there is, and even when my co-author and great friend Maury Posley came over to talk about wrongful convictions, it expanded to these incredible personal stories. Is the personal story, I think, seems to be a real hallmark of First Fridays. Would you, Kathy, agree?
I think that's right. I heard, I wasn't at this talk, but our president, Rich Bedome, talked about Jean Bishop that was here, who talked about she had a family member that was murdered, right, John?
And correct.
She spoke on forgiveness. And Rich said that afterward, a woman that he knew from that was at the lunch said, huh, I guess I'm going to have to reevaluate how I live my whole life after listening to that.
Wow.
Sure. So wow. That it had had such a great impact on
Well, you heart. Said at the beginning of the show that just hearing Mike Flager talk about life convinced you two to plant your family flag in the incredibly diverse neighborhood of Albany Park, where you remain to this day. When the crowd arrives, on some levels, the City Club is really a sort of networking kind of thing, mostly.
Right.
There doesn't seem to be, wonderfully, a lot of networking going on where people are like, hey, let's...
Not in the larger crowd. Yeah. But when we began it, I'm trying to figure out, how can I get a couple hundred people a month? I don't have the time nor the talent to do that. So we built it around table captains. We would ask somebody...
Interesting.
Can you...
Sort of like precinct captain.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the best sense of the word. In the best sense of the word.
Like table captain... Do you think you could ask 9 friends or family instead of the board trying to figure out how do we get 200?
Yeah.
And so we built it around the model of table captains. And so there was networking, but it was around a table. That model has pretty much broken down because of the way the workplace has changed downtown.
Yeah. Yeah.
Number one, Fridays, a lot of people can get off by, so they're going to work right through lunch. And then go. We've also discovered, Rick, that there's a number of people who have retired from their work life, and they're living everywhere, but they love to come downtown. So in many ways, this is a great opportunity for them to get on the train or the CTA, carpool it down. There's a group that comes from Palatine because they like being in the city.
Yeah.
And this is where they spent so much time. You know,
and then they have to go to the Walnut Room later in the afternoon for a drink, right?
Absolutely, yeah, you know, and get on the train and tie them down. You know, it's really.
You say, and again, you listeners can go to firstfridayclubchicago.org and get a ton of information, including something written by John, and John's a fine writer. There is nothing like the Friday Club. And you write that the Friday Club means a lot to me. I want to keep sharing the dream of this club with you. I know it is not as easy as it was a few years ago for you to attend. What does that mean? Because people have retired and...
Retired, they're working through lunch. The price keeps going up, so younger people are not going to drop $45 for lunch. They'll do it after work. But
and a craft cocktail. Two,
yeah, exactly.
Two craft cocktails.
And things
yeah.
like that. But it is more difficult. I mean, and we're the first ones to be aware of that. But yet at the same time, we've pretty much had a consistent, we go between 180 and 220 people a month. That's a lot of people.
Yes, it is.
You know,
What's been the biggest crowd? I'm very curious. After all these, has there been one crowd that you didn't anticipate? I know you and I drew, you know,
thousands
of people who had it at Soldier Field. But was there anybody who really stunned you and you had thought, well, I didn't even realize this?
Didn't stun me, but it surprised me that there was such an amazing response, and that was Father Andrew Greeley. We were in the Red Lacquer Room at the Palmer House in those days, and we sold that thing out, and we had to have a second room with a TV feed.
Wow.
And it was just amazing. And the other one was, and again, that was back in the Palmer House, Carol Marine, the week she walked off of set at NBC.
Yeah.
And we had people telling us, she'll never show up. She'll cancel on you. She'll cancel on you. And I said, I just don't believe Carol will do that. And one of the great names of WGN called me, Bob Collins, may he rest in peace.
Indeed.
And he said, Father, do you think you could get me a ticket to the first Friday Club for Carol Marine? I said, Bob, I think I can probably work that out.
Wow.
And so here is the radio guy in Chicago asking this lowly old priest to get him put the fix in because he knows a guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's so Chicago.
It is so Chicago.
But she showed up. There were people standing around three sides of the Red Lacquer Room. We had the working press.
Yeah, well, sure.
They were all over the place.
Sure.
And she was outstanding, as
As she is.
I mean, we've had her since. I can't say anything but glowing.
So funny you mention her. She and I are doing a conversation at the Newberry Library this Tuesday night, this coming Tuesday. I love
it's my
Carol.
Birthday. I may show up.
Well, call me if you need a ticket. See what kind of clout I can do. We got to take a break and get a little news, but we'll be back with Father John Cusick and Mike and Kathy Cahill from the board members of the First Friday Things. And we're going to try to convince you to sample the First Friday this year. I think that's the gist of this, so please stay tuned. That's the voice of the great Steve Goodman of Chicago. A new CD called Santa Ana Winds. It's too bad Stevie's not around for a lot of reasons, but he would be a good guest at the First Friday Club. He would be a remarkable guest. John, there is not a lot of, and again, ladies and gentlemen, you can go to firstfridayclubchicago.org. John Cusick is in here, the man who founded that whole thing when he was a priest at Old St. Pat's. I know you are. I know you are. I'm semantically, I'm all fucked up about this. Like, retired priest. He's a priest, but he's not on active duty. I think that's the way to put it. Along with board members Mike Cahill and his wife, Kathy O'Connell Cahill. Mike left the priesthood to marry Kathy on the inspiration.
I wasn't quite.
See, what you both get is I'm so confused about religion. Now, John is like, all I know about God and life.
And I told you, you're in trouble.
I leave it. Well, that's okay. I'm just trying to survive. You can get all sorts of information. You can also get a fascinating look at the guests who have been speakers at the First Friday Club since its inception, and it's a really, really amazing list, but it is not particularly star-studded.
No.
When you, Mike and Kathy, you've just been on the board a couple years now, but you frequented the event for many years. When you were sitting around, and I'm assuming, you know, maybe a year in advance, you try to figure out who, you know, toss out names. What's a board meeting like in that fashion?
There's usually some there physically, some on via phone. And, yeah, we kick around names, and some names get some traction, some names don't. We had him 2 years ago too soon. Don't really like this guy. And then some, two or three people will say, what about him? And someone will say, I have a connection. I know someone who knows him. Let's call him and see if they're interested. And then see how many people we get who are at least, you know, considering us, and then go from there.
Some people, we were talking, Kathy, about the notion, the dream of getting Michelle Obama. Some people are very, very difficult to get, especially when you're saying, hi, would he or she be free to come to lunch on the first Friday of a month?
It can only be the first Friday, too.
Yeah, right, sometimes exactly.
You have people give you other dates, and like, no, it's the first Friday.
Yeah, don't you understand the name of this club?
We can only do that. But and John Cusick is always good about saying, so this person may be a bigger name, but will they give, what topic can we get them on that's actually about what our mission is, which
God,
is
these board meetings sound fascinating,
connections between work, faith, values, and issues of the day. So we don't want a person who's just going to come and give a canned talk that they would give anywhere else.
Sure, sure. So. And John, are you charged with the responsibility of trying to track down and get these people?
Well, I think one of the things we do, if we throw a name out, who knows who?
Okay, I get it.
And then take it down another level. Who knows who? Who might know who know who? And things like that. And then you go from there. Usually, the thing, Rick, and you know this from your living in Chicago all your life, we are blessed with an enormous talent pool.
Oh, no question.
To draw from. I don't care if it's the world of business or government,
arts,
politics, the arts, church, religion, I mean, every kind of thing. It's absolutely unbelievable. I think what helps us sell the First Friday Club to potential speakers is hand them all the past speakers. Who wouldn't want to be on that list?
Yeah, that's
a good point.
We
have worked really, really hard to do quality programming with quality people, giving a talk that's much more personal than you're going to get at a business meeting.
Has anybody ever turned you down? Have you gone for someone who said, nah, no thanks?
Before I said no, I can remember one now. And I don't think it was adequately explained. That's my theory. But he was an older man. He was out of the limelight, and I don't think he wanted to. He said, oh, I don't want to do this.
Okay.
That kind of thing.
You won't say who it is?
No.
Okay.
But we lost today, God rest his soul, one of our really good speakers and people in this city, Tom Owens, which many people won't know. He created a program called the CARA program, C-A-R-A.
Oh, yeah, I know of the program.
He was one, Rick, I can't say enough good about this guy. He hit it big. I mean real big. He was one of the few people I've ever known in my life who said, I have enough. I mean, there's a lot of people say, well, we got it. You know, you never know what's going to happen. We got to keep.
Yeah, I need an extra $1 billion.
I know enough. So he and his wife started a foundation.
Wow.
The Owens Foundation. And out of his car, he would go from women's shelter to women's shelter on the south side of the city of Chicago. And his dream, now that he had some finances to do, is to move people from homelessness to employment. And because of all the contacts he had in the business world, he was able to get jobs, but they were gone in 3 to 4 months because they weren't trained for the workplace. And so he created the CARA program. And this thing is absolutely, it was housed at St. Pat's for many years, and they've got space down the street. There's like 16,000 people that he's gotten jobs.
Wow.
And he died today very peacefully. He was sick. And the word he said yesterday to the family around the bed was home. He wanted to be home. Mm. And the word he said this morning before he died was faith. He was a fervent believer that he could build a better world because his beliefs in God.
Wow.
And by God, he did it. And he spoke to the First Friday Club. And one of the people who heard him sponsors 2 people every month to attend the First Friday Club who are in the program. They have to dress up. They have a clothing store at the CARA program. Dress for Success. It's amazing.
That's inspirational.
It is. And this guy started it out of his car driving around the shelters. So you can impact a larger world. And it's because he hit and said, our family has enough.
That's a great story.
It's unbelievable. So,
but also it goes to the point, and you, Mike and Kathy Cahill, but you're being inspired by Mike Flager, who, you know, who gets, as they say, a lot of bad press. But
right.
John is a great admirer. I'm a great admirer. You know, some of the bad press is that Mike gets on TV too much. That's part of it. It's part of it. But he inspired the two of you, and I would hazard to say that there is something. Someone is probably inspired to do something, maybe not as radical as moving into a neighborhood for 20-some years or changing jobs, but that's part of it too, don't you think? That there's someone moves you at the First Friday Club to the point of altering your life maybe just a little bit for the better.
So we have this Jesuit priest, Greg Boyle, Homeboy Industries, Los Angeles, working with gang members. And I think about 2 years ago he spoke, told this great story of a kid. He would usually bring kids to speak with him. And the kid said to him, Father, you're too uptight when you speak. You got to do what I do and use some self-defecating humor.
You people can go to firstfridayclubchicago.org to get all sorts of information. We're going to talk about some of the upcoming. John, the name of John's book, and order it on Amazon right now, is Never Be Ordinary, Wisdom from My Father. You love that book. I'm going to have two do-it-yourself book critics here. Kathy, you're an editor and writer, so give me your critique of Father Cusick's, what I think is an amazing book.
Oh, I just thought it was wonderful. I mean, such a great story about his dad, and so many real stories out of his life. And then to hear you talk with him about it at the First Friday Club in May was also such a treat. You know, he really made his dad come alive for the reader. And sort
he
of
always has
this
to me, too.
And,
he's told me some of these stories long ago and made their way to a book. And, you know, Mike, you've got a PhD in Irish history from Loyola University, so you're a learned guy. Will you give me your review of Never Be Ordinary, Wisdom from My Father?
My favorite story in the book is, you know, growing up, I was a huge Muhammad Ali fan, and I won't go into why, but...
So was I.
But Q's in the book talks about sitting in the bar with his dad, and where usually it was just kind of BS, Cubs and whatever, Sox, So they're all knocking Ali, and his dad turns to Cuse and says, "Hey, if I was that guy, I wouldn't want anything to do with this country either."
Wow.
And it's like, whoa, you know. Yeah. I mean, that's a great lesson from dad sitting on a bar stool.
Yeah, it is.
On the south side of Chicago.
Yeah, yeah, especially on the south side of Chicago.
Yeah.
It's a remarkable book. We got to take one more little commercial break. Then we're going to come back, and the three of these fine people, John Cusick, Mike Cahill, Kathy O'Connell Cahill, will give a real preview of the upcoming season of the First Friday Club, which begins on October 4th. So please stay tuned. Starting about a year ago, my new friends, Mike and Kathy Cahill, sat in a room with my dear old friend John Cusick and a number of other people who were on the board of the First Friday Club of Chicago and determined who they wanted to have speak in the year 2019-2020. The new season begins... I think I'll call it a season on October. Yeah, it is.
This coming Friday.
On October 4th. Featuring who?
We've got the privilege of hearing Alan Krzyzewski, the dean of broadcast journalists. He walked into Channel 7 when he was 21 years old, and he was a street reporter. And now he's 58 years old, so 37 years. He's the dean of broadcast journalists. And there's a wonderful article
By Brian Smith in this month's issue of
Chicago Magazine, the October issue. So, folks, you can get that online. Please read that article. It's, you know, we see people and their faces, and but we don't know who they are.
No,
you
of
know?
Course,
and
especially on
we
TV.
Don't really have a right to know who they are because that's not why they're there. You can really tell the impact of his life on the integrity of this man.
Yeah, no question.
So that will be Friday in the Union League Club at 12 o'clock. And I think if people contacted the First Friday Club, there may be a couple tickets left. I think we're pretty tight on number of people. And as I mentioned, Ed Wehmer next month, the head of
Wintrust.
I mean, that'll be pretty powerful.
Who else?
In January, the topic fits the time of the year. There's a priest in Chicago, well below the radar, Father Charlie Ruby, for 35 years has been working with families and friends of suicide people. And what a horrible thing in life, you know, when someone you love dearly has chosen to take their own life. And he has become the person. And so this is where we decided, what's the hardest time of the year? January in Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, let's get Charlie. And he said, yes, I'll be more than happy to do that. And he will be absolutely wonderful. Is he a big name? Has he ever been on the headline? No. But the impact he continues to have on people's lives is just absolutely...
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
Absolutely unbelievable.
Well, that's the other thing about, you know, you can look through, Kathy and I keep looking through the list of people up there, and we're going, wow, look at all these cool people who've been there. But the ones who the general public does not know often tend to be the most moving and the most powerful because you have selected them. Your board have selected them for, you know, you may have argued about it a little bit amongst yourselves, but you've selected them for good reason, knowing the Friday Club. You can also, on the website, First Friday clubchicago.org. And all of these luncheons are now held, except when Father Cusick and I again do it. Ours will be at one of these new stadiums.
We'll be at the United Center.
United Center, I think, is perfect for us. They're held at the Union League Club, which is a spectacular place with very, very good food. You also have started, gotten very hip and technological, and started recording these, haven't you?
Right.
What's been the response to that? I bet it's been great.
It's been good. You know, I don't know enough about all of that technology stuff, but there's a gentleman from Hyde Park who's really a whiz at that, and within 24 hours, you go to our website and the talk is there.
See, that's a good way for you people to go in and sample. They don't have them all the way back to Cardinal Bernardine years ago.
No.
But for the last
year and a half,
you can get a real sense of how interesting these conversations are. And also, to your point, all of you, the question session afterward is often spectacular.
It's very revelatory of parts of a speaker's life. Very revelatory. Because it's not prepared. It's, here's what someone asks, and let me tell you what I think about that.
Well, the people, I know, Mike, you've gotten up to ask a few questions over the years. Kathy, do you do that too?
I do. I also do, yes. I've asked quite a few. And it's really good because you get... I find the questions are very thoughtful. Usually they run out of time. There's so many hands up.
And so usually,
we have to cut it off. It's 1:15. But you really do get a lot of really interesting and revealing answers in the Q&A that you might not get in the talk. Cause
now, John tells me you have a couple of very bright young children, James and Kate. Do they, what ages, how old are they?
James is 31, and he teaches 6th, 7th, 8th grade history and religion at St. Francis Xavier in Wilmette.
Wow.
And my daughter's 24, Mary-Kate. My daughter is 24, and she works for the House Democratic Caucus in Springfield.
Oh, how nice.
On issues and policy.
On one side for your son, how wonderful and how sadly crazy your daughter's job must be. Have they been to any of these? Have they come to First Friday?
They have come from time to time. It's hard because it's hard for them to get off at lunchtime.
Sorry, kids, I'm gone. I'm off for the day.
They've been to a few.
I think James came to hear Eboo Patel.
Eboo's an interesting guy.
We had him a few years back, and James came to hear him. And Mary's coming to hear Alan Krzyzewski.
This week she's coming.
So
it's a family affair.
It is.
Did you ever explain to them why you live in Albany Park when they said when they were teenagers, why do we live here? Said, well, it was a Father Flake. It was a First Friday. It was a First Friday invention.
You know, 90% of my kids' classmates and friends through grade school and to a lesser extent, but still a great extent, at the high schools they went to were people of color, and they've had a whole different perspective on what it means to be a Chicagoan than I did growing up in Beverly.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. I was lucky enough to grow up in Old Town when it was relatively not chic, but it was...
Yeah, I grew up where it was all us.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah.
I always like to tell the story when I first began working at Angel Guardian Orphanage, which is now Misericordia, up on Ridge. It was the first time I ever met Jewish people in my life. And first time. I mean, I'm 20-some years old, and I lived in such a ghetto. And to break out of that and to realize what a wonderful world we have based on its diversity, not on us fighting to keep it our way.
Yeah.
Because our way just doesn't exist.
Well, that's why the diversity of this town, which you two, you Cahills, have experienced in a glorious
just come out,
way.
Come to go out to eat in Albany Park.
Exactly.
You can get everything.
No, I know. It's like, I mean, and that's the way the world will be becoming. Like, you know, it's not going to be this kind of, you know, except for very, very wealthy people who can live at the top floors of very, very expensive buildings and never see the street, never do any of that stuff. Mike, what do you do for a living?
My main job is a financial planner, and then I sort of moonlight as a teacher of Irish history. I'm not doing it right now, but I taught for 10 years at the major seminary, Mundelein Seminary.
Did you? Because I'm fascinated. I've had John on around St. Patrick's Day. I always have somebody on to talk about Irish history, and I was just made that it is a lot more than a kiss me, I'm Irish button. We'll have to do that this year. We'll get Catherine O'Connell.
Well, you know who you want? Get Catherine O'Connell and Father Jack Wall.
Yeah.
They created this concert in Orchestra Hall.
Oh, yeah,
Hall,
of course, because which I cannot pronounce.
Yeah.
Simpson-Nagel?
Simpson-Nagel.
And I did it.
To bring some Irish culture that has always been out there, but is drowned out by green beer.
Yeah.
And he said, we need a cultural event in the city of Chicago to celebrate Irish heritage. And this thing sells out every year.
Yeah. And the Irish Heritage Center up on the near...
Oh, they do a great job.
Far northwest side do it too, but there's just... I think there's just not enough of it. It's not all... The whole world of Irish arts and culture is not all about Gaelic Park and a wedding reception at Gaelic Park. Have you ever had anybody at First Fridays speaking at like the first Friday of March about that very thing?
We really haven't. That's a good, now you're going to put an idea in my head.
Now he's going to make me be a board.
We've had a couple Irishers speak at the First Friday Club, but their topic was a lot broader than Irish identity. Because we're trying to also break out of a stereotype and make sure that, you know, our talks have an openness to an awful lot of experiences of life.
Yeah.
When we sit in board meetings, you know, we're trying to say, how many men do we have? We need a few more women.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking for balance. You're looking for people of color. We're looking to somehow...
Reflect the world.
Reflect the world and reflect the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
And it's in its neighborhoods and every other kind of thing.
I greatly admire what you do, and I'm grateful for you, too. John, I was firmly convinced that John did this all by himself, as he does many other things. But it's great to have colleagues like this in a venture like this. Please go to... It begins this coming Friday, October 4th, with Alan Krzyzewski, speaking not only about his life as a prominent television personality, but the sort of darker sides of his life. You can read a story about that and prepare yourself in this month's Chicago Magazine, a story by Brian Smith. But go to firstfridayclubchicago.org. Become a member, which you can, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
And then you'll get on a mailing list. You can also listen to podcasts of previous Friday clubs. Mike Cahill and Kathy O'Connell Cahill, it was a real pleasure to meet you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Did he have to twist your arm to make you board members?
Not really.
Okay.
Usually if John asks you to do something,
yeah,
say yes.
It's like the nicest arm twisting imaginable. John Cusick, it is always a great treat to see you.
It's an honor to take.
I wouldn't go that far. You know better than that. The title of John's book, and I hope it's the first of many, is Never Be Ordinary, Wisdom from My Father. It can be ordered at Amazon or any place else where they sell books. They must have some at the church.
No.
There's no, like,
it's on Amazon.
There's
Amazon.
No gift shop at the church.
No gift shop. We take your money. We don't, you know, that's it.
And all you get is salvation. What a bad deal. What a horrible deal. So stay tuned. We're going to be talking about a new documentary film series coming up. And also, Roger Badish will be in here after he's done with the 10:30 news to give us an update on his ongoing autobiography. He's deep into it, but I haven't had him on to talk about it in some time. I'm very remiss about that. Mike and Kathy, again, pleasure to meet you. Thanks for coming in, John. It's always great to see you.
Thanks, Rick.
The stage is set and the lights go down. The passion play can now begin. Enter the hero and the heroine. But he's supposed to be good at this. He's supposed to know how.
That, ladies and gentlemen, of course, the voice and song stylings of one Steve Goodman, one of the great performers, artists in the history of Chicago. He's got some new CDs out, four of them, and that one is Santa Ana Winds. Some years ago, I guess maybe, I don't know, he's on the phone, so maybe he can remind me. I interviewed Adam Raby about a remarkable book he had written called Circus of One. It was his debut memoir. Adam, how are you?
I'm well. How are you, Rick?
Was it about 6 years ago? I'm getting old, so I can't really remember now.
We both are. It was November of 2013, so that is 6 years
ago. Oh, good. Yeah. That's 6 years ago. Before we get into this striking and what I think could be a very important documentary series that you're making and that you're going to be showing around the country and in Chicago, specifically on October 8th, we'll get all the way into that. Let's talk about the book, because if memory serves me, this was a book about certain substance abuse troubles that you had, and if I remember correctly, and again, I think I'm getting senile, but it started when you were arrested for your seventh DUI. Was it six?
Well, I call it lucky number seven, and certainly it was one of those moments in life where, everything changes. And I was at a point in life where I didn't really want to keep living the way I was living my life. And, seventh DUI was preceded by a 3-day drinking blackout. And, I was dragged off my couch by police. And, by the time they got me down to the police station, I blew a .40, so I'm a miracle to be alive.
That is a miracle to be alive.
Yeah,
it really is. How did you? I know by the time you wrote the memoir, and again, you can get this. It's called A Circus of One, and it seared itself into my memory in part because it was so honest. If you just heard Adam Raby talking, he's a very honest human being. How did you? What was the recovery like? You know, I'm not totally versed in all of the correct terms, but recovery has to be among them, right?
Correct. Recovery is certainly one of them. And you know, I think there's many stages to recovery, regardless of whether it's substance abuse or any other kind of thing that you have to overcome in life, right?
Yeah.
Especially, more importantly, addicted to a way of thinking, and certainly being involved in any kind of addiction, certainly that is one of the backbones of that kind of using something to change the way you're feeling and managing life.
Yeah.
For me, it was really, it all started at the age of 8 when I had my first drink. So it was about 35 years of drinking, and I used the liquid spirit, if you will, as a vehicle for me to manage the rest of life. And at the age of 8, when you attach yourself to a source inevitably it becomes a very selfish disease. It's very difficult to have connection with other human beings.
Yeah, it sort of deadens it deadens a person in a myriad ways. It's sort of it kind of becomes a defense mechanism, but it also inhibits the ability to have any sort of real relationships with other people,
including yourself.
Yeah, importantly, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, when I found myself, you know, getting sober, at the age of 43, and it was a good 18 years going to, you know, AA programs, doing it on the streets, if you will. I never really went to rehab. And unfortunately, the insurance system didn't think that someone who had their 7th DUI met the criteria to get help.
Yeah, that's
so I was actually denied entry into the rehab, and I came back and just started going to meetings, and sometimes it was 2, 3, 4 times a day, just to get some clarity on what was actually going on in my life. And even at being sober for 6 months, I wasn't really sure if I wanted to change my life, because that's really what it entails, is not just changing a few things, but changing everything.
Well, changing your associations, changing friendships, changing right. the sometimes shattered relationships with family and friends. That is why when your sister Terry, who was a dear friend of mine, said you were you had a movie, I wasn't surprised at him. I knew that something was going to come of this, and I don't live in Albuquerque, so I don't see you with any regularity. But you got You've started, after getting sober, you started doing a lot of things. I mean, you were you're a public speaker. You're an author. What other things did you start doing? I don't want to tip off. I want to spend a lot of time talking about this documentary. But what was your sober journey like?
Well, interesting enough, you know, after about 18 months of you know, learning about my own story, I didn't even know my own story.
Yeah,
not many of us do.
Right.
Certainly that was a part of that process. And you know, the other part of the process for me is actually learning what my truth was. So that was equally as devastating, because you know, when you're in this constant state of just trying to keep everything going, you don't necessarily have the time to sit down, reflect, and actually see how you got there. And certainly, the program of A kind of allows you to do that in this really interesting way, which is about storytelling.
Yeah,
because people get in a room and they share their stories with each other to help the other person.
Yep.
And it's the first time in my life where I've ever heard that type of honesty about where people were at in their life. And it took me a while to find that in my own, not only find my own story, but find my own truth, because it was buried deep. It really was.
Well,
you know, one of the things they say is that when you get sober, and when you find yourself at the emotional level as when you took your first drink. So I'm a 43-year-old man with the emotional level of an 8-year-old.
Well, but that also, I got to tell you, Adam, and just from what little I have seen of your of the pilot for a potential 7-part documentary series, you may be the most talented 8-year-old I've ever encountered in my life. We're going to take a little break, and then I want to get into this sudden change, how this came about, because I think it came about. There's not a lot of information out there about it, except the viewing of it, which I've done, and it's a remarkable piece of work. But it came at you kind of as a surprise, and we'll explore that with Alan Raby after a short commercial. Welcome back to After Hours. I'm on the phone from New Mexico, is Adam Raby. He will be in Chicago on October 8th at the AMC River East 21 Theater, just not only blocks from here, for a 5:30 showing of Adam, this is sort of a pilot for a potential much lengthier documentary titled Sudden Change, is it not?
It's correct. It's you know, the intent here is to because of the stories are so powerful, these 7 characters that are in this pilot, these characters deserve this 1-hour, you know, episode each. And so we're using this as a vehicle to introduce the characters, introduce the docuseries, and then go back. And we've done a lot of filming already, but we need to go back and do some of the backstory of these people and certainly up to date on where they're at currently as you know, time moves forward. But you know, that's the idea, is to in next year to go ahead and film the entire every character getting one full hour.
I think just from what little I know of these characters, it's a fascinating. I think you're right doing this, and also, you know, these days with all these various streaming, and there are just so many more outlets for a work of substance. This all started when an old friend of yours, who you hadn't talked to in some time, called you up, and Gina Thomas said, "Hey," I don't know if she said it like this, "Hey, Adam, I just bought a football team, and I want you to help me." Is that basically how this started?
That's exactly how it happened.
Wow.
Certainly my response was, what?
Yeah, what? Why haven't you called me in years? But you hadn't talked to her in a long time, right?
It was 35 years since high school.
Wow.
And she had heard that I had written a book and had done some work, and I helped people. And she said, "You know, I feel like I'm in this moment in life where I need to reach out to you." And I got your number and I called you up, and "Can you come help me?" I'm going, "Well, I don't know much about football, and I certainly don't know anything about running a professional football team, but maybe I can come help you." And that's how this all started.
Well, and you met some remarkable, I mean, she seems a remarkable person, because she's been through
incredible.
tragedies of her own. The other person that really grabs me is Dominic Bramante, who's probably the first Native American head coach with football championships. Yes?
This is correct. He's the first Native American professional football coach to win a professional championship.
Wow.
Not only that, but this year that was in the 2018, but they just won the championship again. So not only just one time, now it's back to back. So quite a resume, quite a story. He grew up in New Jersey for the first 35 years of his life, thinking that he was Italian. He grew up in the Italian culture, Italian family. And at the age of 35, his sister slides across the table a birth certificate that he'd never seen before. And his sister tells him, well, you're not one of us. I've been teasing your whole life. But in fact, you weren't. You're Native American. And he was just shocked.
As one would be. Then there's also one of the other featured players is a player himself, a guy named Dello Davis, who there's only small things keeping him from being a star in the NFL, isn't it? He's not big enough, right?
And that's certainly part of his story. Dello grew up in St. Louis, and as a lot of football players or athletes out there trying to continue on, their dream of playing in the highest level of their sport and these indoor football leagues and CFL football and that kind of stuff. These are stepping stones to possibly getting their shot in the on Sundays, right?
Sure.
And the only thing, this guy is the most prolific offensive threat in indoor football, and they list him at 5'6", and that's generous.
Wow.
But this guy's got a heart of a lion, and he's just fantastic on the field. But even more importantly, he's equally powerful off the field, and how he connects with children and adults alike, and people just flock to him. He just has this essence to him that he's had to overcome something in life, too, which is this limitation of how tall he is.
Physical stature.
And that's never stopped him. And it's just a powerful story about, these young men that are fighting for their dream, and certainly in getting playing professional football, but certainly it's not what professional football players are really getting paid, but they're doing it because they love it.
Wow.
And they love being out there, and they love helping people. It's powerful.
The amazing thing for you, I think, Adam Raby, is from out of nowhere, this Gina Thomas calls you and you start exploring. I guess she says, look, I want you to meet the people who are involved in this team, including the mayor of Albuquerque.
Correct.
And I think you, and I don't want to, you're probably be too self-effacing, but because you have in recovery, have sat and listened to and shared some deeply emotional stories, you are not loath to share with people and ask them in a fashion to share with you. So that's how you're encountering the stories that will make up the full episodic sudden change. Do you think that's true, Adam? Because you are so forthcoming and you open the door and allow people and give them a kind of nurturing ground to share their own stories.
One of the powerful lessons of this, and certainly one of the passion for me as I move through in the last half of my life, is about allowing. I guess I realized how powerful it was for me to tell my own story.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did that through writing my autobiography.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get to see how life connects. You get to see how it all comes together. You get to see how every experience is purposeful. Everything leads to the next thing. Everything has purpose. Nothing's left out. And as I move forward in life, one of the things I've realized is that, not only did I have some specific skills that allowed myself to write, but I had some really amazing people that came around me from all walks of life. And one of the things that I really like to emphasize is how dynamic healing is. It's not a one way. There's not one way to heal. It's so powerful, and there's so many things that have to happen. And I realized that, I'm a lucky guy.
Yeah.
One, to survive what I did to myself, but two, to get through recovery and get to a place where, I'm healthy, not only emotionally and physically and spiritually as well. But now I want to be able to allow people to have that opportunity to tell their own story. And I know how powerful that is, because when you find your own medicine that's inside of you and you share it, it potentially can help somebody, give them the inspiration to maybe go find their own medicine. And well, that's part of what I'm trying to do.
One thing too, I mean, it's obviously affected you creatively too, but also the fact that, you know, when your old buddy from high school, Gina Thomas, called and said, "Hey, I bought the Duke City Gladiators. I haven't talked to you in 30 years. Can you come help me?" You were open enough to say, "Well, you know, Gina, I don't know anything about football, but sure, let me come see what's going on." And you have discovered a what will likely be, if first indications are good, and they are from my thing, a documentary series called Sudden Change, focusing on these roughly on seven people who make up the seven stories that you feel need to be told, and need to be told because they will affect other people, right?
This is correct. And, you know, it's where really the personal becomes universal. And that's what's powerful about each one of these stories is that, you know, these are regular people.
Yeah.
And everybody has a story. Everybody has walked through something. Everybody has been affected by a moment in life that's changed their life.
Yep.
And, you know, to find that medicine in that, to use that, to walk through that, and then to use it to be impactful in community, but, you know, that needs to be shared because we need a lot more of those stories out there that are powerful, that are inspirational, that give people the tools to say, you know what, sometimes things happen to me, or sometimes I make a bad choice, or a series of choices, or a lifetime of choices, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm stuck in that place and that I can move forward and there's another side to that story.
Well, that is powerfully put, as it was in your book, A Circus of One, a chilling but ultimately redemptive memoir. So on October 8th at the AMC River East Theater, just a few blocks from this fancy studio right in the middle of downtown at 5:30, there will be a screening of Sudden Change. How long is the film you're going to show?
Well, Rick, the doors open at 5:30.
Okay.
The screening is at 6:30. Mm-hmm. The runtime is 60 minutes.
Wow.
And then there's going to be a 30-minute Q&A. I am actually bringing the cast with me.
Wow.
So the cast will be in Chicago, and then they'll be in Austin after that in San Diego. So not only you'll be able to watch the story, but you'll be able to interact, and interface with the characters afterwards.
This is...
And then after that, just down the street at the Raby Institute for Integrative Medicine,
your sister's throwing you a party.
Yeah, there'll be a little reception there. There'll be a little bit of snacks, a little bit of beverages, but there'll also be a blessing ceremony. Susan Lipschitz and also Connie Lindsay will be giving a blessing ceremony for the people there, and about really the blessings of storytelling, about us helping each other, you know, that we're better off together than we are alone. And that's a lot of the story about addiction and recovery is that, or in life today, it's moving so fast that people feel left out. People feel like they're not included. People feel like they don't have a voice. And we want to say is that everybody has a voice and everybody has medicine to share with someone else. And that's what I want to emphasize in these stories as I move forward and tell, you know, after we get through this series of stories, I want to go out and find some more stories and keep the storytelling going.
Adam Raby, if anybody can find them, you're the man to find them. It was thrilling to watch this. Now you're a great movie maker. You're a great writer in this incredibly honest book that you wrote. I hope I get to see you when you're in town, Adam. I want to meet some of these people, too. That's for sure.
Well, we want you to come.
I want to come. Congratulations. Ladies, you can go to the website and get a lot of information. Sudden Changed Documentary. Sudden Changed Documentary. That's changed. SuddenChangedDocumentary.com will give you all the information you need. Adam, congratulations on the other screenings, and I'll see you in Chicago.
Thank you so much, Rick. Have a great
pleasure.
Evening. Appreciate
you. You too. Interesting guy. Started drinking at 8 years old. Dan Long and I are going, wow, that's pretty young. Roger Badish will be in here for a half hour to give you, the listeners, and you've been asking, an update on his ongoing memoir. I do not think that Roger Badish ever had a seventh DUI, but who knows? He's a fascinating guy on many levels. You just hear him mostly deliver the news, and he does that extraordinarily well, but his life is very fascinating. So stay tuned, and you'll we'll give you an update, tell you when you can buy books, when and where you can buy books. So I will tell you first, Chicago Knows Best, right? Hit up Facebook and tell Chicago's Best TV where you like to eat. Watch Chicago's Best Sundays at 10 p.m. on WGN-TV. Your pick may be Chicago's Best. Chicago stories told 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN radio on TuneIn. It's 10:30, and here with the news brought to you by Builder Supply Outlet, the guest on this very show momentarily.
Dear Johnny, this is a ballad I wrote a few years back. I don't know if you're looking for this kind of stuff, but anyhow, here it is. It's a long time since I saw you last.
Well, that's Steve Goodman. I'm in here with Roger Badish. It is not a long time since I've seen him last. I see him every Sunday. I see him on Facebook. I talked to him occasionally about the book that we've been talking about for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
And what happened Friday, I was at a dinner party and having a nice conversation about politics and sports and everything. He goes, you know what? I'm meaning to ask you. I go, okay, yeah. What's the status of Roger Badish's book? And so I start to try to tell them, because I do know, kind of. I know you finished parts of it, and it's been...
Yeah.
But Roger Badish, in answer to your legion of fans out there, what's the status of your book?
I'm in the final editing, semi-final, because I'm sure the editor, Rick's editor, will go through it with a fine-tooth comb. I'm editing it. I've cut out 68 pages so far. I'm still in the first chapter. But as I've mentioned to you for a couple of weeks now, I have found focus. I have found purpose in actually going back. It is completely done. Before I came here to work tonight,
yeah.
I told my wife, I says, you know, I don't think anyone really believes that I've written anything.
I swear to you, that was the sort of vibe I got off this person's dinner party. And I go, how do you know about the book? He goes, well, you and Roger seem to talk about it with some frequency, but I haven't heard it mentioned in a while.
Yeah.
You know why? I'm not even going to mention your name, but you know why? Because he's been writing it. I'm not the kind of guy who's going to go to him every 5 minutes and go, how many pages did you do today?
Yeah, right.
It was
a massive undertaking on my part.
I'm not going to call it arduous, but it was arduous, wasn't it?
It was very arduous. Yeah. There were three things got in the way.
Life.
Yes. Desire, because again, as we've discussed here a number of times, and both on and off air, who the heck wants to know about my life? We won't get into that further discussion. I'm past that.
Good.
Five people have shown interest in buying the book, so I'm good with that.
Well, he's got a publisher.
Yeah, we have a
don't
publisher.
Don't let him be
I'm
so self-effacing. The publisher is Eckhart's Press,
right?
Run by, among others, Rick Kampfer, was on the air recently. He and I talked about the book, too,
right.
And you saw him
in fact,
when he was
Rick
in
came
there.
To me. That's the
exactly.
initiation of the book. He came to me. He did an article on me in the Illinois Entertainer magazine a number of years ago, and I was surprised that anyone wanted to talk to me at that point, and then... but he was going off of what I'd been posting on Facebook.
Yeah.
And he thought, you are some kind of, I don't want to say special, but he was moved by some of the stuff I wrote about teaching and things that I went through in life and everything. And his questioning made me think about my life because I go through every day like it's a regular day. It's
of
not
course,
special. I don't see anything that some people like yourself, because you have been a strong backer of me finishing
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely.
And
my only fear, I'll tell you one of the fears I have, and who knows where this half hour would go, but one of the fears I had is one thing, and I've seen it happen. I've seen people, you know, sort of start to write biographical materials on Facebook. And Facebook is one thing.
Right.
And you get five people saying, loved it, love, like, love, like, love, like, keep going, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But it is vastly different. Then Facebook is not a book, even though it's called that.
It's a page.
John Cusack, who this is this book that he's written, the priest who was just on, Never Be Ordinary Wisdom from My Father, actually started as a kind of Facebook thing. And then what he told me, he goes, Rick, I had no idea. I had to refine it. I had to expand it. You found that to
be true. In fact, that was the original idea I had for the book.
Yeah.
I was going to take my post out of Facebook and use it to highlight those points in my life.
Yeah.
I did that and then found there were things missing, especially when I was going through the cancer. There were a lot of things I didn't post.
Yep.
Not only that, first, I don't know if it's a Facebook algorithm or something about it. I'm not smart enough to know about that technical stuff, but I got the feeling as I started going back through all of my pages that there were things that I thought I wrote that aren't there. And so I wasn't sure if they disappeared or or if I'm not thinking right and maybe I didn't write anything.
Or you were thinking of these things as you were writing something and then didn't
continue. Could have been. And there were some times where I remember, you know, I would write those missives on Facebook early in the mornings before I'd go to work, before I went to teaching, in the kitchen, and that's along my computer, which is very old, is a long way away from where our internet connection is, and so every so often the computer would freeze up and I'd lose everything. I would write for like 45 minutes, suddenly the great ideas came to me, I'd write 45 minutes and all of a sudden, gone. And I'm like, whatever, you know, and just move on.
What about a writing rhythm? You must have at one point gotten into a kind of, because all sorts of writing is different. News writing is different than newspaper writing, is different than script writing, is different than book writing.
Oh, yeah. And I'm finding that. And I thought, though, you know, I'm a pretty good writer when I write the news. I can put together a 10-second story with all the pertinent details in 5 seconds. I'm exaggerating it a bit, but I'm very good at that.
I get it.
And I thought, well, that's going to make writing the book easier because I have that talent. No.
Completely different muscles.
My gosh. Yeah. So not only did I take the wrong tact about... I took the correct tack about finding the stuff from Facebook and making that.
Right.
But then as I wrote it,
that became a kind of skeleton for
you. And I'm thinking, there's more to this. And one of the big things, those three things, which I now forgot the other one, but one of the big things was as I tried to put more detail, because I'm writing, I'm thinking, I need to make the reader understand what I'm going through at this moment. So the more detail, the more they'll understand, which I'm wrong on a lot of cases. So as I started looking for the detail, I go, wait a minute, when did that happen? What day of the week was that? Do I remember the call letter correctly? Who's the guy I worked with? Because it's been a while.
Yeah.
So the majority of the time I've been writing this, I've been researching and contacting people.
Yeah.
And looking things up, thank goodness for the internet, or else they would have lost me in the library.
But also in doing that research, thereby refreshing your own memory.
Exactly, which triggered other stuff.
Yep.
Which is like, oh, that's something someone might be interested in, or that's an example of what Rick had come to me about. And so it turned into several 10,000 volumes of Harry Potter.
Yeah. And I remember when you came to me, you came to me one Sunday night in here and said, well, I finished chapter 7. And I go, okay, well, that's great. You go, Rick, it's like 60,000 words. I don't know what I'm going to do. We're talking to Roger Badish, the great newsman here, but a man who has had a fascinating life. We'll continue on after a short commercial break. And maybe we'll give away the title. That's totally up to Roger. It is called...
we'll talk about it.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to out the title. Yeah, we got it. We'll talk about it. Okay. We'll be right back. My guest, Roger Badish, on this last segment of After Hours, is talking about his soon-to-be fully born memoir. Are you calling it, Roger, a memoir or an autobiography? That's always an interesting...
Wow, it's never thought of that. Yeah. Technically, it's an autobiography.
Yeah, it is.
But it seems... I think it's more than that because I think too. That's what Rick saw in what
we're talking
about
Rick Camphor at Eckhart's Press.
Right.
Yeah.
It is. It's the story of my life up to now, but I'm trying to edit out the... Oh, and on Monday I went shopping. I'm trying to get rid of that.
Well, that sounds like a wise idea.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I'm just trying to now focus on those moments that identify with the theme and the title of the book.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at those moments that most people would look in me and after hearing it and look at and my reaction to it and look at me and say, "Are you nuts? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you see that? How could you be so blind to what was happening?" And that's kind of the gist of the book.
Yeah.
As I started thinking about all those incidents that Rick and even you
sure.
have told me, well, you know, that was a teachable moment. That was a
no question.
That was an emotional thing or a life-changing thing. And I'm going, I guess. And I think...
Well, it's hard to be, as you were saying earlier, it's hard to be as you're going through life, take the moments to start reflecting about, you know, well, that was really interesting going to Harold Washington's apartment and hooking up his stuff and even working for Harold and being the only person held over from the Jane Byrne administration.
Right.
I mean, that stuff is fascinating, but you didn't at the time have
exactly.
a chance to rationalize it.
Yeah. And so those thoughts, those rationalizations came out later after the internet and Facebook.
Sure.
And you know, I've only been on Facebook like 10, 11 years.
Yeah.
So all those years prior to that, there's no record except photographic record.
Right.
And my memory, yeah. which is...
Well, but also, you know, as you were saying, the memories of others who were in
exactly.
your circle. You've had a number, what has made your life particularly fascinating is you've had a number of different circles of life.
Mm-hmm.
The teaching life, the radio life, mm-hmm. the political life, the, you know, Las Vegas life.
But again, all of those were not planned.
Yeah, I know.
Not a single one was planned.
Well, I know, that's what I love about it.
And it's like, oh, okay, I can do this now, and I'll go ahead and do this, and... I'm lucky, knock on Formica, I'm lucky that everything that I've done, with the exception of being a mover when I was, you know, in college,
yeah.
working for a moving company, which lasted like a month, like, you want me to back my,
I want
break
that
my
chapter.
Back on this?
I want
what?
That chapter.
Yeah, right. I don't want to say I've been successful at, but I've been... in a position to be able to do good for others.
Gotcha.
Not that I meant to, mm-hmm. because in the process, all I thought I was doing was my job.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think a lot of people go through life, and you have, amongst all of my modern day associates, you, over the years... have been one of the most prevalent to point out to me the effect that my just living has had on other people.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people in this world are like that. You don't know the influence, good or bad,
right.
that you have had on other people because we're so busy, we have the blinders on about just
we're
going
so busy
through life.
Giving that influence. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the gist of the book now. So the Facebook posts are becoming a part of it, but they're not the focus of it.
How long is the book?
Too long. Actually, as I was going to say, that's what my last question is. I was leaving the house tonight. I said, you know, I don't think anyone actually thinks I've written anything. I was going to bring, I've printed out the original first draft, which in order to carry it, I had to put in a shopping bag.
You have to be an 18-year-old mover again.
Right? Exactly. The thing is massive. If, I mean, I'm looking at 3 inches thick.
Has anyone else read the entire thing? Has your,
no,
your lovely wife?
No, she hasn't even read it. The only thing I've had anyone read, and it's only Bridget and Rick Kempfer, and that is the prologue and the introduction. Very short. Both of them very short. One of them, the prologue, is, if I can call it that,
yeah,
is a post that I did on Facebook from when I was going through the cancer.
Right, right. Changed it all? Altered? Updated?
No, exactly as it was.
Wow.
Exactly
wow.
as it was. Because, again, that was one of the early morning...
Sure,
you
sure.
know, Facebook writings that I did when the spirit moved me. Then the second, the introduction is the idea behind the book and the title, and then thanking a ton of people for putting up with me. And I've gone through the first chapter. I'm still in the first chapter, and I cut out almost 70 pages. From that, I'm like, you know, nobody needs not, to know.
Let me ask you, a technical question.
Yeah.
It's not as painful as one imagines.
No, now it isn't.
Thank you.
Now it isn't.
I so wanted you to say
it
that.
Was after I wrote
oh,
everything.
My God,
I said,
sure.
I need to leave everything in there.
This
I'll
has
do
to
a
be
chapter
in there.
A year.
My
you know?
Chapter, my 18-year, my month being a mover. It's got it's so important to my life. But you do realize once you've got it all down on paper, you realize.
And once I have found the focus.
Yeah.
And that was my biggest problem with not going back and doing it. I says, this Facebook focus is not working. I need to find a different focus. And I found it by realizing what I went through in each of these moments. And I'm hoping that it's a universal feeling.
Yeah.
That I'm hoping when people read it, they will sit there and go, oh, yeah, I've been through this too. I know what he's talking about.
That's
and
great.
I'm hoping that's what this will be, and if it's an eye opener for some people in their own lives,
sure,
God bless. If it's not, well, you're going to have a lot of good laughs when you read this, because there's a lot of stupid stuff that I did that that
right.
fortunately or unfortunately were meaningful at the time.
Yeah,
you know,
I can't wait for this thing. I can't wait. When I hate to do this to you,
right?
But we only have 2 minutes.
I'm hoping
after.
Spring. Just spring one of, spring of next year, of the
2020.
I'm hoping.
Hoping you will deliver the manuscript.
Yeah, I'm hoping it'll be available spring. I've got to find more time
yeah.
to keep editing. I have to be encouraged by what I've done so far.
What has been, I'm going to ask
yeah.
you, I mean, I know your lovely wife, Bridget, is would be kind no matter what. What did your editor, what did the editor publisher,
oh.
Rick Kempfer, say of the preface or the introductory pieces that you've given him that you think are ready to go? What did he say?
So I'll give you what Bridget said.
Okay.
Because I told her, I says, clear your mind. You don't know me. You don't know who I am. I want you to read these two. The prologue and introduction. She read it, put it down, walked out of the room.
Oh, Christ.
Came back about 20 minutes later, sat down, and she said, you are one hell of a writer.
Oh.
And floored me, because she's never read my stuff before.
Yeah.
She's not on Facebook. And
well, that makes her
I was blown away.
Supreme intelligence.
I was blown away.
Yeah.
And...
That's
Rick
great.
Said, first of all, he said on the title, when I sent it to him separately, he says, perfect. I sent him the prologue and introduction. He says, this is exactly what I was looking for. Perfect.
Do you know how rare that is for a writer to get those kind
well,
of responses?
It's my first time. I don't know.
Well, I'm telling you, it's so. Rare. Roger Badish, I will keep you, the listening public, and the people who bother me at dinner parties about Roger. I said, what about this Trump impeachment thing? There? Yeah, that's interesting. But when is Roger Badish going to finish his book? So I think, Rick Kempfer, if you're listening, you got a bestseller in your hands. Roger,
God bless
it's an ongoing pleasure for me to live vicariously in this writing thing with you. It really
thank
is. Thank you. It really is.
Thanks for the opportunity.
We got a couple commercials, and then we'll get some news.